Welcome to AB Testing Podcast, your modern testing podcast. Your hosts, Alan and Brent,
not here,
will be here to guide you through topics on testing, leadership, agile, and anything else that comes to mind. Now, on with the show.
Hey everyone, it's Alan here. Brent is once again, he got called back to do some work for Satya. I think he is lubing the chassis on Satya's AI-powered car, so we're going to see how that goes. He'll be back shortly, but I am joined. I'm super excited today. I have a guest today. I have just a super interesting person. We've been talking. We could have talked before I even pressed record, like for an hour, but I thought I'd get a podcast done too. He happens to be the CEO of Sauce Labs, but also a great mind in testing. Welcome, Prince Kohli. Prince, say hi to everyone and tell us a little bit about yourself and why you're here.
Hey, Alan. Hi to everyone. I'm here because I love testing. As Alan said, I'm the CEO of Sauce Labs. I have now been in the technology industry for, I don't know, like God knows, 35 years or so. Undergrad computer science and PhD computer science. I wrote about what are called persistent memory models. That's required for distributed systems before distributed systems were, hot. So I love software and then been in the Bay Area, Silicon Valley for 30 plus years. Technology companies, SGI, then my own company, Teros, and Citrix for a long time, platform engineering. Then Ericsson had a huge team across the board. Really interesting because Ericsson is one of those people you don't really think about, but they have the world's data. Like they are in literally every country of the world running the network of cellular phones. And data is king, as we know it, as we all know. Then I build agentic automation platforms at Automation Anywhere. And then Sauce Labs, I would love to get into why Sauce Labs at some point, because I feel that the opportunity presented by the new kind of, AI world in testing is just amazing. So hence Sauce Labs. But here I am.
Yeah, here you are. And one thing that's been a common thread over the last, I don't know how many episodes of this podcast, is how AI is affecting testing. And there's this, if you're on LinkedIn, there's this, it's just weird. Some people think AI is going to solve everything and humans won't be needed. And that's the right answer. And some people think AI, it doesn't work well at all. You should just ignore it. Also a horrible idea. And I'm glad we have people like you who realize there are wonderful answers somewhere in the middle. So we'll just start with this. So what's your take? I know you live in the middle somewhere. What is AI doing to testing? Very wide open question. We get started with that.
Very, very wide open question.
Yeah.
The interesting thing here is you can stake any ground and probably have a few ways to prove that ground is correct. But let me, at least from my experience, so I have been in the software space now as an engineer, then as a manager, then as an exec for a very long time. So I've run, obviously, QA teams, like many of us, many of you have. So to me, testing has always been one of those things in software development that are critical, that are key. But here, I might go out on the limb. Most people don't enjoy it, right? It has been mechanical. It is hard to do. Honestly, I often say, and I think I find most smart people nodding, testing is harder than code writing.
Mm-hmm. I've been saying that for 20 years.
Yes, I know. But, I think all smart people understand, and I'm probably insulting a few, but who don't. But I think testing is harder because you have to understand so much more about the environment you're in, right? There are edges. There are environment. When you write code, most people think of the happy path, right? This is what it is supposed to do. But testing is all about the happy and the very unhappy paths. And also the environments change all the time. And plus also code is written for environment one today and tomorrow the environment changes. Small changes, OS upgrades, browser changes, but sometimes even more. And testing is supposed to account for all of that, right? How do you do that? It's impossible, right? How do you write tests that are not themselves, that themselves don't run into regressions? It's a very hard. You laugh knowingly. I know that, right?
It reminds me of a conversation I had probably 25 years ago. I was working on the user level graphics, GDI, on an early version of Windows.
Yeah.
And we had, I remember having a long whiteboard conversation. There was a function called get pixel and set pixel that would set the color of a pixel in a window.
And
the question was, you know, the Oracle question, can we use get pixel to test set pixel?
No.
Like, oh, maybe we need to write code to go analyze the memory and the video buffer and see what's in. It's like, no, yes, you can. Yes. The answer is yes. But we try to make things hard. And also, if the pixel is the wrong color, someone's going to notice.
We don't need to
go wild, but it's easy to go, because when you're focusing on testing, there's this big world of things you can do. And what I think is the essence of testing is to figure out which are the tests you should do.
Right. Yeah. I'm so glad you bring that up. People get lost in the universe, right? Saying it's impossible, there are too many things, and therefore I will do what I can. And that is, you know, I think the wrong approach.
Mm-hmm.
And the way sometimes that I put it here as well is, you have to understand business intent and business focus, right? Intent means, what is the application supposed to do? And second, focus is, what does it care about? What do you care about, right? Which are the parts that matter, right? You don't really have to test for, you know, some things don't really matter. They are too improbable. And if you have a way to account for that outside, that is okay. But the intent matters, right? And the intent is outside the code. When someone says, writes a spec for an application, you almost want to write a test-driven spec. You want to say, this is how the application should behave. And that is a test-driven spec. And when when an input is not of the right type or the environment is not of the right type, then it should behave like this. That is also an intent-driven spec. And then whatever the code is that is written, the way to that at least I think about testing is that it should not at all look at the code, especially kind of, you know, black box testing. Shouldn't look at the code at all. It should, based on the intent of the test, it should say, this is what the application should behave like. It should then, you know, it should exercise the application. It should create the right test cases, which are independent of frameworks, independent of, you know, shouldn't really care whether it's Playwright or Selenium and so on, whatever the framework is of choice. Should be browser independent, browser agnostic, OS agnostic. Once you do that, and you can write tests that are stable, meaning your application goes from version 8.9 to 9.2, if the semantics have not changed, the test should not break. And that is such a big statement, because today, right, what happens is tests break because they are too sensitive to button placements or, you know, or form field placement or, you know, form field names.
Forever, yes.
Yeah. And, you know, you're just chasing your own tail at that point. You're just wasting your time. I mean, most of the time is spent fixing tests that should not have broken to begin with. So as long as, and that kind of jumping back to your question, how does AI help? What we have been able to do, and I'm sure we are not the only ones, is you use AI to glean intent, to get intent of the application out, and there are multiple ways to do that. Then you author tests that test for that intent and make sure the intent is, you know, correctly verified. And then you do it at scale. You do it with high quality, high confidence. You do it with the right level of human governance, right? And you do it with stability, meaning you don't break. If you do that, you know, it's golden, right? Developers are 90% faster in writing tests. AI code, as you know, the last stat I saw was that 40% of code is now being AI generated. And I'm sure it's going to go
I'm sure that's rising quickly. In some places, much, much higher.
100%.
Yeah. So we're seeing development increase exponentially, if not more, via AI tools. And I've used some of the AI tools to write code. And I've used them 2 years ago as well. Mm-hmm. They've improved massively. So developers are faster. Writing code's never been the hard part, but now it's even easier. Also, so what I'm talking about from your angle is, I've always been a believer that the vast majority of testing should belong to the developer. They own all functional correctness, probably some more. And then some test expertise, depending on the product, is essential for understanding a lot of times fit, a lot of times understanding if it's solving the customer problem in an intuitive way, which can't be done through automation, but it can be done through AI assistance to help you find the right things to do. Without leading you too much, which I've already done, I'd love to hear your take on how developers should be leveraging AI for better functional correctness, and then how test specialists can use AI to help do, I'll just say, do their testing, to help make sure the product has better customer fit. Keeping in mind, under the umbrella is that my questions are way too long. The complaints that Brent and I saw, we're going to talk about modern testing principles in a bit. We made those because testers are having a hard time navigating this world of agile delivery and everything's moving faster. Now everything's moving even faster. So we're talking about what does AI mean for those test roles. And it doesn't mean you're out of a job. I don't think you can disagree with me. But how do we leverage AI both in developer testing and in expert testing to keep up with the massive increase in developer productivity with AI tools?
I think you're hitting, most of the questions that people have in mind nowadays, you know, in software development world, the larger software development world. So the way I think about testing is, it's an umbrella term. Right, we sometimes, you know, we call it release assurance. Right, it's an umbrella term. It starts by understanding what the application intent is, then translating that to authoring, meaning create the right tests. Then execution, run the tests on the right devices, whether it's browsers or Android or iPhone or you know whatever else it may be. Then understand, be able to look at the result and understand what happened. Did the tests pass? If they failed, was it a false negative? And also, in case when they do fail, what went wrong and how quickly can you get to the root cause? Right? How quickly can you use that? And by the way, AI is very helpful in all of these.
Yeah.
And then after that, be able to, you know, for any large-scale application rollout, you're going to have A/B testing, you're going to have beta rollout. Be able to understand that when users use the application, does it match your expectation? Your tests are written for a certain, based on certain assumptions of usage. During beta and then during production, be able to match that expectation of usage in the real world with the tests that you have. So all these things have to then come together and create kind of this virtuous loop, right? And that is not a human solvable problem. It has to be done with AI. Humans are there on top orchestrating, you know, understanding. But AI has to be able to pull in this large pipes of data, look for the right patterns, look for understanding, do a lot of the heavy lifting of creating the right tests. And then the biggest thing is tools like Cursor are now creating code at breakneck speed. Testing was always a bottleneck. You don't want to suddenly turn around and realize you can do code at lightning speed and testing has actually become much worse. So now you have to start creating very high quality tests at least the level of code creation. So that weakness in testing that always existed, it is now, you know, kind of, you know, the searchlight is now in the, you know, is on
exactly, and that's exactly the point I like to bring up with a lot of folks who are worried about, you know, AI taking their jobs. There's always been holes in testing, and I'm a big believer in theory of constraints. As you know, it's one of our modern testing principles. And the code part's really fast, and testing was already in a lot of teams a bottleneck, and it just highlights it more. Now it's a bigger bottleneck. You can, and I see some folks post on LinkedIn. Again, I make fun of LinkedIn, but they want more time to test. And that's great for wanting that. And it's great that you can do that and justify it saying I'm doing it for the customer. What's the use of developing code, quality code? And it's the code generated by code generation tools is identical or better than most human development. It's just not an option to say we're going to slow down for testing. So how do we take this thing that's been slow already and fragile? And the story I thought of when you were talking a minute ago was at a time I was at Microsoft, there were 10,000 testers at Microsoft. And I would bet this is probably true. I would say based on my information, it is true. because I saw it on a large division. I would guess every one of those testers spent a chunk, an hour or two of every day debugging failed tests to see if they're really a product issue.
100%.
Do that math and count the money. Yeah. And now I don't care how expensive tokens are. It's cheaper now.
Yeah.
And it's more fun work. So
yeah.
Talk a little bit more about how like AI is shining that light on testing and how on like the AI code generation is and how we can use AI to accelerate that testing process.
Yep. Yep. So starting at the very top, right? Writing the right tests, that's very hard. And if you can use AI to take, let's say, a PM written spec, you know, RFEs, or just take a Figma design and say, I'm going to then use a design in the behavior, which is implicit or explicit in the design or in the spec, and then translate that to a test on any given framework of choice. That's just that is saving you days, you know, easily days per person.
I would go less technical. How about we talk about here is, because one of my favorite quotes is customers don't want software, they want their problem solved. Yeah. What if I just said, I have some software that's supposed to solve this problem. What tests do I need to run to make sure that problem solved?
Yeah. See, but I think that's as simple as it gets, right?
Yeah, it is. It is. And you want to, it wouldn't get everything, but one thing I've talked about, keep on interrupting. I get excited about this stuff. I think the ability to judge and discern the answers you get from a generative AI solution, you're trying to guide some, pick your tool, through some questions and refinement of questions, the ability to do that well leads to massively good results. Yeah. The inability to do that well leads to a lot of the complaints folks have about AI-generated test cases.
Yeah, that's 100% correct. And by the way, that is also now, going from an art to a science, right? Which is, what do you feed, right? What kind of, people call it prompt engineering, but it's far more than that now.
Yeah, I hate that term. But yeah, it's far more than that.
Because it trivializes something so important, right? The context you provide it and the data you provide around the context, and then your own expertise that you provide, that is what makes a tool work better. The tool is not magic, right? I mean, you need to get the right results. So then authoring, a huge deal. It is one of the things that developers should be testers, especially functional testers. Developers should be
yep,
that.
I agree.
And developers, I mean, we have all been developers in the past. We don't like writing tests. We want tests writing to be as easy, quote unquote, as easy as software writing. And with AI,
it is.
Yes.
It is. More than ever. It never was that much harder. It is, especially now.
Especially now. That's right. And that with AI, I think that is one of the core solutions that are presenting themselves. That with AI, you can now create tests at the speed that you are writing code. And you can create excellent tests far better than you could actually code yourself earlier. That is just the truth. And these are stable tests. You don't have to keep on, I mean, like you said, 20%, 30% of the time, at least, is being spent in fixing old tests.
Mm-hmm.
All that goes away. Because e-commerce application, right? There is a cart. There is a shopping cart. I can put a T-shirt in it, and I should be able to, delete, add things to the cart and delete things from the cart. The semantics of the shopping cart do not change just because you upgrade it from one release to the other. And earlier tests would fail, even though the semantics weren't changing. So as long as the semantics haven't changed, your tests are stable, you can regenerate the tests, but the tests are stable. And that is a huge deal that AI is able to, AI is able to bring forth. And then, of course, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'll let you finish. I had an idea.
Yeah. So over there, from a test expert perspective, and I'm not going to put a hat on whether it's just a tester or a developer, because roles are hybrid nowadays anyway. So from a test expert, quality expert perspective, test coverage, understanding what the test does, test coverage, therefore application coverage, then the ability to keep tests stable, running at scale, and get information back on what is failing, why is it failing, those are things that testers spend their entire days doing. And then, of course, the other part, which is in production when things are running, how do you get that data, understand that data, and make sure that your tests are speaking to the real world, right? Mm-hmm. Because the real world is not going to speak to your tests.
Yeah, all the, and I'm going to bring in the modern testing principles again a little bit, because mm-hmm. we've gotten pushback and flack on some of those for a long time. Mm-hmm. It's fine. It's fine. Mm-hmm. They weren't meant to be controversial, but I understand why they are to some people. But all the things that were difficult there now get easier today as well. Mm-hmm. The one, I forget the word. I'm not going to look them up right now, but we have, I will. We had one around data. We thought the one that said that, we expand abilities and know-how across the team, understanding this may reduce or eliminate the need for dedicated specialists, was the one that would cause problems. People said, nope, that's fine. We get that. Hmm. The one that people get mad about is we said we believe that the customer is the only one capable to judge and evaluate the quality of the product. And the reaction on that is, well, you're asking customers to test. No, we're not. They're not going to enter bug reports, not giving them a test case. But what we want to understand is through data, another principle, is the software solving the problem we expect it to do? Are customers hitting error paths? And this comes back to asking the right prompts. If I'm a developer, not only am I asking what are the right tests for me to create, I'm going to ask questions. A good developer should ask questions around, how will I know this software is behaving in production? And I say, oh, you'll need to measure this and this and this, and it'll help you. The difficult part was figuring out, okay, how do I add telemetry? Where do we collect it? What does it do? There's just a lot of, it makes every developer who knows how to use it and knows the right questions to ask, and there's a lot of education we can give our teams on that. But you can get a lot of value from asking the right questions. So then the point is getting the code in to generate the data that tracks how customers, no PII, but what paths are they using? What failures are they seeing? That's infinitely easier now. And then we can write tests based on that. We can write assertions based on that. All of a sudden we know all this stuff that's going on, and we can monitor it. We have a whole new insight into how customers are using our software.
You know, to build on that, right? So I completely agree. To build on that, in the modern world, right, SaaS world, the role of, it's not just a tester, but the product managers are able to then tell how a product is being used, how to improve it.
And honestly, they could ask those questions too. They could vibe code in the telemetry.
There you go. And I think people sometimes do not exploit the power the data provides them, right? Especially in the SaaS world where all the data, if you have the right telemetry, you know the code paths, you know the hotspots, you know where people spend time, you know where they don't go at all. That allows you to test better, create better applications. And then earlier, the insights were not accessible. I think, you know, I mean, how mm-hmm. much Datadog and Splunk can you do, right? But they were not accessible. And now they have suddenly become accessible in natural language, in a conversational format.
And pattern match. AI is so good at pattern matching.
That's right.
It reminds me of a conversation I had in a cafeteria. Again, all these things that were really, really hard earlier in my career. It's like, The lights are on bright. Yeah. I had someone come up to me working on Exchange, the backend server for Microsoft's mail product. And they said, I get 2 terabytes of telemetry every day trying to find insights. It's like needle in a haystack for a human.
Impossible.
But it's so much easier with you can write an agent to go find the top 5 issues customers were seeing that day.
Which is exactly what we do. You know, and our customers, you know, this, I won't give you a product pitch, but I'll give you a pitch about the area. When we start selling these products that we have in this release assurance and, you know, many of the things we just talked about, it's one of those rare moments where every customer, every prospect you go to and you say, this is what we can do, they all say, all I want to know is if it works as you say. Because if it does, I'm going to buy it. Because everyone has that problem, right? Everyone is worried about the amount of code that is being created, the quality of that code that is being created, the slowness of testing, and the effort to push code out without truly verifying it and truly even knowing who owns, mm-hmm. you know, the quality of that code. If you're able to solve it with AI native, other AI native code like we have, then it makes everyone's life easier.
Yeah, I had a thought, and AI, and people aren't here yet, but I have some thoughts around how AI is changing how software is delivered. And I hinted at some of it before. The challenges that didn't have high ROI before, like, you know, let me write something to analyze these 2 terabytes of data. Too much work. Or the little utility that makes my life a little easier. Yeah, it's fine. It's not the ROI. That ROI bar has changed so much. If there's something that it may take 5,000 lines of code, but it saves me 30 minutes every day, I would 10 years ago, I would never go write that. Now I can have an AI write that in 5 minutes. I can test it and so much time is saved. Yeah. And then here's the question for you. So that's just me as a developer. Marketing, legal, sales, accounting, they can all also create software solutions to make their lives a little bit easier. They're not always going to a production, but they may be hosted in AWS somewhere. They may be doing things. They may have to test their stuff so it can be used across the whole department. How can AI, I mean, I'm going to get back to where AI is going with testing, but we have a whole bunch of people who were never creating code before who can now create code. And if they aren't now, they will be in the next few years. Yeah. Then what happens?
Yeah, I mean, we actually have a real world example. I can't name the customer for obvious reasons, but one of the largest banks in the world, their marketing, we were demoing it to the CTO team, right? You know, that's where most R&D lives. Their marketing department came to us and they said their marketeers want to use this because now they can actually test the thing that is going out. And they were just so excited to be able to do that. And that is just to me, that is just a start of a completely new journey.
Yes. Yeah. And that's what I'm really excited about that. So if that's it, so now we're saying not only, I mean, some testers freak out when you say developers can do testing and say, no, they can't. And now we're saying, we're going farther. We're saying, no, marketing can do development and testing. These poor people are going to have to hold on to their hats. So all that said, two-part question. Easy one first. What is AI doing to test? Is AI taking testing jobs away? And after you answer that, how is AI changing what software testers do today?
So on the first one, I think there is always this worry that tools take jobs away. I find tools make jobs, take the mechanical part of job away and allows people to use the brain, you know, brain cells they have to do actually things that are far more insightful and interesting. It makes the quality of your job better. Then you like going to work more than you used to earlier. So I don't think jobs go away. It's like, you know, you go back 40 years, compilers were created, right? Developers certainly didn't lose their jobs, right? They just wrote more code.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So, you know, it's exactly the same thing. I don't think it's any different.
It's the same story, different actors, different subject.
That's right. Things become easier and therefore more things get done. It doesn't mean less things get done. So that I don't worry about. I think that role will evolve as it has been evolving now for 40 years. So that part is okay. The role does change though, right? It does change because, you know, last 25 years, a trend has been that manual testing is just not the right way to do things. You can start with manual, but you really have to go to, you know, automated testing. The level of automation and the level of automated automation almost, you know, with the new LLM-based testing solutions, that is something the testers have to be able to exploit now. So that, in that sense, the role has changed, just like the developer role has changed. Mm-hmm. Developers who don't know how to use Codex or Cursor or you know, Gemini-based tools, if they don't know how to do that, I think they will be forced to learn. Similarly, in the testing world, people who care about quality will have to learn how to exploit these tools and make sure that the code that they're writing is then testable in the right way. Mm-hmm. But I see that again. I see that as a wonderful new ways of doing things, not as a worry area.
Yeah. So one thing, and this is the same thing that happened with Agile as well.
Yeah.
And in that transition, I saw a lot of folks. And again, I keep on dropping Janet Gregory and Lisa Christman's book on Agile testing. It's the first one I read where I nodded my head so hard. I think it's chapter 5 talks about managers. Said the manager's job turns into a coach. And taken one step farther, I think a lot of, and we've seen this happen a lot in the industry, especially over the last couple of years, but even before, you end up with the really good tester being the coach, traditionally, pre-AI, helping developers understand what tests to write or pairing with them on tests or bringing some of that testing expertise into the team. That's what we meant by that principle number seven. That coach now is, I see it, I'm curious on your thoughts here. I see that coach moving from what sort of questions do we ask the AI to make sure this code is higher quality? And that means they can coach the marketer as much as the developer.
You know, it's actually, I think, a deeper question than most people realize. See, if, you know, it's such a good question. How do you know a code is high quality, and how do you ask it to be certain that it is high quality? That means you must truly understand the intent of the code. You must truly be able to say, you know, my code entity, you are supposed to be doing X, Y, and Z. When you see input A, B, and C, you should be doing X, Y, and Z. And the ability to enumerate those and the ability to think of all of those inputs is what determines quality in many ways. If you can describe the surface area of the application and also of the environment as fully as possible, then, you know, your quality bar is set at the right level, at least in my view.
Yeah, and I'll give you an example here in a second. I think you're right, but the difference is now that's always been the question we've had to answer for quality.
Yeah, yeah.
Now
yeah.
we just are answering it 1,000 times more often than we used to. Yeah. So let's look at, we're using, this is not a plug, but I've been very happy with a product called Riverside to record podcasts. Let's me do some fun things. It records locally, does all the stuff it's supposed to. Let's say Riverside was created with AI in a day. They've obviously, I'm not picking on you, Riverside. What questions do we ask of, and it's basically, still people haven't used Riverside. It's basically an audio video client with some bells and whistles. Yep. So there's a lot of intent here. How do we use AI? Like, what sort of questions do you ask? Like, what, like I just on the spot here. How do we know if Riverside, all that stuff I've said, it has screwed up on me before. How do we know if Riverside is good quality?
There you go. See, we are doing vibe. We are doing vibe QA right now on you know, live.
And I don't have a good answer. I'm just kind of curious. We're going to riff on this for a minute and move on.
But how
do you know? Like, it's always the hard question. How do you, like, as if I go, only the customer knows, really. Yeah. The customer is, they're the one, it solves my problem. Because customers want their problem solved. It solves my problem, which I need a good way, a reliable way to record podcasts. But we don't just want to throw it to the customer first and see if they cancel their subscription or not. So what can we do to make sure it's high enough quality that the customer can give us their evaluation?
Yeah. Can I lob some ideas?
Yeah.
So you know, the way I would think about this is that, see, Riverside is interesting because it is an existing application, right? In many ways, that makes some parts easier, and I say that carefully. Because the easier part is, I would ask AI to go look at the Riverside recordings and look at the comments from users and use all that data and say, what does it do? Just before I do anything, I said,
that
go
is
figure
great.
Out
yeah,
what does it do?
Go pull from Reddit or they have a Facebook community. Wherever they have community, go pull from there.
Yeah, go look at all that and educate yourself. You know, become an expert at what it is supposed to do.
Or train and the AI to be expert on it.
Yeah, but then when you know that, then go and make sure that you have written, you know, a set of rules and ways to test it and say, make sure you exercise the application in these ways to verify that what it is supposed to do, it does. That's where I would start. And then, you know, of course, I would build on that. But that's a way for an existing application, because, you know, I think you said this multiple times earlier, it's a customer who determines the truth.
Yeah.
If the customer uses it in a certain way, then there you go. You have gold already.
Yeah. And I wonder if, talk about intent, and I think you're right there, and we're just riffing here. What if I just made Riverside, never heard of it before, an application, and as part of the onboarding sign-up, people hate a bunch of questions.
Yeah.
But what if there's one question around, like, what problem do you hope, like, what do you want to accomplish with Riverside? Or if you're switching from another platform, what's the biggest reason why? I wouldn't ask a lot because people won't fill it out, but if you get a lot of users and they just give you some little one sentence answers, then all of a sudden you're capturing customer intent that you can keep and then use in that same way.
That's right.
And then they have the reactive one going to look at forums. So there's
these are
ways of thinking about quality that I don't think many testers or any software development teams have thought about much before.
Right. Yep. You know, and it's almost a crowdsourced, you know, intent creation, right? And then you can add lawyers in the middle. You can say, by the way, lawyers or support engineers. Let's not even go legal. Support engineers know CSMs, right? Customers, you know, they know how their customers use a product, or how they expect to be using a product. Suddenly, they become your testers, because a CSM engineer, a support engineer, can then go and wipe code, right, or create, you know, but in a healthy way, these test scripts and say, this product we are shipping, Microsoft Exchange Server, it must do these things because that's how my customer uses it. Mm-hmm. Then suddenly that is a script that is stable, that is a script that is going to be run every time, you know, pre-shipment, right? Overnight sanity tests. So the richness of the quality tests that you have is going to increase, and it's going to reflect the real world, not just one person's point of view.
Yeah, I think, I'm just thinking out loud here, I think things like the give feedback button.
Yeah.
Become much more valuable, because if something's not working, I get a chance to like just type something in and send it off.
Yeah.
All of a sudden that becomes a rich set of data I can use to see like what isn't working for folks. And in that we can capture, you know, browser information or whatever, get some information like, oh, this is how we find out that, again, this is where tools like Sauce help to test on a bunch of different browsers, but this is where I find out, oh, we don't render on Opera.
That's right.
Or something.
Yeah. And then automatically, right, you know, if you use something like Sauce, you automatically take this data and you create new tests, because if there is a hole that got, because if something got shipped, right, and it was broken, there's clearly a hole somewhere, right? So you take that, you not just write the test, but you also make sure the test is run all the time, and that way you just get better every time and you don't regress. So the new world, you know, with this, you know, everything in the CI/CD pipeline, everything connected to each other, it's when used well, I think this will raise the bar for everyone.
Yeah. And I think I hinted at this before. I think if your software delivery process was really good before, if you were doing CD before using AI, your transition to AI was probably pretty easy, because you had confidence that anything you checked in or a human checked in could go to production. If you didn't, you're struggling, because, and it's not that AI is the problem. The problem is you never addressed your bottlenecks. And I was talking to a company a while back, time is weird. And they were happy with AI generating a vast majority of their code, but they still wanted a human to code review every code change. It's a bottleneck. So then how do you choose which ones to review, and what do you do? Again, you can use AI to help solve those problems. You can shove a human in where you need to, but anytime you're putting a human into the system, you're adding an intentional bottleneck. And that may be okay depending on the software, the context, all kinds of reasons. But if that's the issue, the problem is not AI is generating code. The problem is you don't have a way to, and again, there's sometimes a human is needed, but you want to minimize that so that you never have a human bottleneck, or if, especially as traditionally, there would be the one human who go on vacation that nothing could release. that's like the story of the Phoenix Project, right? poor Brent in the Phoenix Project couldn't go on vacation. He was the bottleneck on everything.
Yeah. In the CI/CD pipelines, if you had them deployed well, and if you were already in some of these modern SDLC and modern testing, then testing was not a burden of one team or one person, right? Testing was already spread over multiple users. They knew what the code was doing, and the developers already owned a chunk of it. Then your life is easier now anyway, because then the transition to AI is very natural.
Yeah.
Now, if you were in the liberal, the older world where testing was all downstream, right? There was a team that tested at the very end. Then yep. you are in trouble. And that is only exposing a problem that you always had. I mean, it is not a AI-generated
problem. Exactly what I'm seeing is that was already a problem for you. Now it's just much more obvious. The same thing, even if you couldn't do CD to a lesser extent. The problem was always there. The accelerant of code generation is just highlighting problems elsewhere in the system. And that's true in any system. If you speed up one part, it'll highlight where the slower parts are elsewhere.
That's correct.
And that's what the goal, the theory of constraints, the goal of Phoenix Project are all about. So if you're a team, if you're a, I'll just say a team, I won't even say a test team. If you are a team delivering software and you're struggling with the speed to ship as fast as you want with the speed of AI, ship confidently, what advice would you give that team? I won't give it a limit. Like, give me a couple pieces of advice you give a team who are struggling to keep up with the speed of AI generated software. Like the CEO says, like, we're writing code all the time. How come we're not shipping it? And they say, because blah, blah, blah. Like, what advice do you give that team?
You know, it's very simple. AI native code generation is accelerating code creation, and that is actually a good thing, right? Because when it started, there was a lot of AI slop, and that slop will decrease over time. The quality of the code is getting the translation from intent to code quality is getting better. In the same way, verification has to proceed independently and use AI and be AI native in that sense to make sure that code as written is towards the intent of the code. You have no choice. I mean, you cannot skip your way past it. You cannot trust your code and say everything will be fine because AI wrote it. That's kind of would not be very smart at all. You almost always also want to use a different LLM, by the way. If you use one LLM for code writing, I would suggest use
a different LLM.
Right? I mean, you just, you know, you don't want to trust everything to Peter. You want to have Bob in there as well. So that's the way I would do it. I would say start with whether a platform or a set of tools that, again, like I described earlier, are able to more or less autonomously understand the intent of the application, write the tests for it, be able to execute the tests on the right platforms, devices, whatever the need is. And as you go forward, are able to look at the results of the test and automatically, because you really want to address the entire cycle, automatically tell you where things may be going wrong, and think of a release manager or a QA manager's hat, right? They want to be able to quickly tell what ran last night, what broke, where do I go look? Maybe that's hours of work every day. And then, of course, take that forward into deployment, into the beta, into real-world deployment, and bring all that data back and make sure that your tests are addressing real-world user scenarios and that you're able to keep on accelerating the software development lifecycle, not slow it down.
Yeah. So similar question, and maybe a little bit more direct, then I'll open things up, is if I'm a tester now on a team and I am worried that I'm going to lose my job of AI, what do I do to make myself I won't even lead that. What should I do?
What should I do? Just if you haven't yet already, go start playing with any LLM that you want. It doesn't matter which LLM, right? There are many of them, and to start with, all of them are good enough. Start with that. Start into vibe testing almost. Ask it to create any application that you have. Just give it a prompt saying, I have, the example I used earlier, I have a shopping cart application, whatever it may be. I have a shopping cart application, or I have AWS. I want to test AWS and Amazon Retail. Write me a set of tests on this framework that goes and exercises this. Just play with it. See, people have already forgotten. Time has moved so fast. 2 years ago, when people were starting to write software with AI, two and a half years ago, it wasn't that long, right?
People were saying,
"Oh, this will never work." You know, many people.
Yeah.
And then the first thing that people told others, saying, "Look, don't worry. Just start with anything." Right? Just ask it to write a program and see what happens. And then before you know it, suddenly it gets better and gets better, and you start realizing how to make it write good programs. Testing is actually exactly analogous. You have to go try a few things. It's really writing a program, sometimes more sophisticated programs, but it does make life easier for you. That's the way I would start. Start learning those things. And then, and there are platforms out there like ours that provide you many of these things out of the box. Then you'll be able to ask us better questions saying, how do you work?
Yeah.
Do you solve my problem?
One thing I did, I was working with some Gen AI generated test automation. And there was a little bit of learning curve. Like, how can I ask the, I knew a bug was there. So, and this is a fun way to do it. Learn to ask the questions that'll make it find that bug.
Yeah.
And there's some discretion there. I think there is an art. I hate the term prompt engineering, but there is an art to figuring out what questions to ask and how to interact with an LLM to give it the answer you're looking for. And this is funny. It's the same with a Google search. This is why, some people will say, I'm having a hard time. This is in the old days, people use Google first. They say, I'm having a hard time finding this. And that's what they're looking for. And I'd use slightly different search criteria, and I'd find an answer for them right away. There's an art, just as there's an art to a search query, there's a more nuanced art to LLMs and getting what you want out of them. So practice doing that. Figure out what they're good and bad at. Don't get all excited because it can't figure out if you should walk or drive to the car wash. Understand how they work so you could ask them questions that they can answer.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
And people who have, a programming past and so on will find that it's exactly the same pattern. When you start writing a program at first and you get frustrated because it doesn't do what you thought you told it to do, you realize that you had to code it more carefully, right? Thing will do exactly what you told it to do.
It will. and a lot of times when it leaves something out, it's like, oh, I've learned to to ask this question, which is why I think, pair programming, always a good idea. I think pair prompting is a great way to learn as well, or even whether no matter what you're doing. Pair prompting, I think, is a fun idea. Imagine a developer paired with a marketer on trying to vibe code an app.
Oh, wow.
I think it could work because the marketer knows the problem they want solved much better, even if they explained it to the developer for an hour. They know it. They know the nuance. Right. Oh, I can't do that because of A, B, and C.
Yeah.
I always come back to the Anthropic vibe coding contest. They call it something different, but a lawyer won because he knew the domain area around the problem he wanted to solve really well. And he created some verification app for some licenses. So it's... There's something there.
Imagine what hackathons are going to look like now, right?
Yes, a whole company. I want to do a hackathon with a whole company.
Yeah.
Solve something cool and get some nice show and tell at the end.
That's right. And you actually will create a real application at the end, right?
Yeah. We'll have a real application.
Yeah.
Great. So let's go ahead and wrap it up. Before that, is there any? I'll ask the meta question here. Is there anything I should have asked you that I didn't?
So we covered a lot of ground, and I think I strongly suspect that many of the questions you did ask are top of mind, I think, for your audience as well.
For sure.
The only thing I would add is, and this is, most people may know it, but I would say that, most of our customers are very large companies, large enterprises. And I just want to tell the audience here that they are very smart about this already, and many people are already using AI native products such as Sauce Labs to solve many of these problems. You would think large companies are going to be slow. That is not the case. Large companies are moving very fast. The pressure on them to move fast is high. They feel the need to move fast. So my advice is learn quickly. And it actually is a lot of fun. It's actually more fun than you would realize. So spend some time on it.
Sounds fantastic. Well, this has been an amazing conversation. I'm so happy you're here and had a chance to talk about this stuff. I think this is very relevant to everyone listening. And I appreciate the time today. So thank you.
Thanks, Alan. And thanks to everyone for listening.
All right. This has been, I don't know what episode, like 232 of the A-B Testing Podcast.